Ladies and gentlemen, this is the opening teaser to next year's program. Our topic this afternoon is the Academy. Is the decline reversible? Let me set the stage by telling two vignettes about a very successful approach to academic freedom and a very unsuccessful one. The story begins in 1974 when I was hired to be vice president for academic affairs at Bryant College in Rhode Island. The faculty there had probably been more badly exploited than any other institution I've ever known. For instance, in 1967, when they initiated their pendulum swing, they had full professors teaching for $8,000 a year and teaching 18 credit hours and scrambling for extra compensation courses. Obviously, under those kinds of conditions, they took it as long as they could, and then they formed a union. They called the AFL-CIO in Washington and said, "Do you have a union for college professors?" And they said, "Of course, it's called the American Federation of Teachers, and we invite you to start a chapter." Between 1967 and 1974, when I arrived there, the leadership of the faculty who had committed themselves to the college gradually gave their pounds of flesh and were replaced by some left-wing radicals who were unconscionable and were committed primarily to the union and not to the institution that paid them. The president of the faculty union was an Irish revolutionary. I use that term very precisely. He sold IRA bonds on campus. He used to talk about the best way of building an institution would be to destroy it, and out of the ashes, phoenix-like, a new and purer institution would arise. And my very first task in dealing with him was to deny him permission to use the college print shop to reproduce 5,000 copies of a half-page ad to free the political prisoners in Northern Ireland. For 4 years, I watched that faculty union destroy any sense of collegiality that may have existed within that institution. It was one of the most challenging experiences in my life, but one of the least pleasant. I'd get up in the morning and I'd say, "Well, expletive, who am I going to have to fight with today?" I was responsible for doing the collective bargaining on behalf of the college administration, and we quickly formed a warm bond between myself and the faculty union leadership. We exchanged mutual lawsuits, things like that, that tend to bring groups together. I left there after 4 years, and we had made some significant progress, but I must confess that faculty unionism, at least in that case, had destroyed any sense of collegiality, although the college had to accept a significant portion of the blame itself. I went to Nichols College in Dudley, Massachusetts, and of course everyone knows where Dudley is. It's right next to Webster and Oxford, of course. Actually, it was like walking into a different world. Small college, rural setting, people who liked one another, competent faculty, an adequate student body, and an atmosphere that fit me very well. The board asked me to enunciate the mission of the college, and I did it in one sentence. I simply said that Nichols College is a center for the study of free enterprise capitalism, and we're proud of that mission. During the first year that I was there, a very courageous faculty did a very unusual thing. We had a faculty member who was due for reappointment in the fall, and with that reappointment would have come tenure. Faculty rank and appointments committee, in an entirely professional manner, recommended that he not be reappointed and given tenure. And the reason for that denial was unprofessional behavior. Actually, this man was adequate in the classroom. He was well above average as a scholar. He was a marine biologist and had written a number of articles in solid refereed journals. But morally, he was corrupt. He had the sexual mores of an alley cat, and unfortunately, he exercised these mores on college time and on college property. His colleagues quite justifiably faced him and recommended unanimously that he not be reappointed. Now, you should understand that the Rank and Appointments Committee consisted of all tenured full professors at the college. It was a unanimous recommendation to me, and of course the faculty member appealed it. I conducted an independent survey, and while he did have some supporters, he also had a significant number of detractors, and his behavior clearly was immoral. The day before the board meeting in January that would take the action with my recommendation that he not be reappointed, he mailed a rather voluminous mailing to each of the members of the trustees. And the trustees, of course, wanted to know precisely what had happened and when. I explained it to them and explained the faculty support for what I was proposing to do. They asked that I remove him from the classroom, honor our contractual obligations, pay him his full salary, continue his benefits, and so forth. But they felt it was not necessary to give him a platform from which to attack the college. I did so, and of course, as might be expected, he went to the AAUP. Now, the AAUP, as you know, is a fine scholarly group. And they immediately initiated an investigation of the college, and my response to them was, when they asked if they could come on campus and hold hearings, not only no, but hell no. First of all, you only have three AAUP members on campus, and all three of them are full professors who have been threatened by your proposed client with lawsuits. They're not going to talk to you. I said, secondly, you're a labor union, and you don't have standing on this campus. You are not an organized bargaining unit here. We don't have to talk to you, and you may not come. So they set up a hearing off campus in one of the local hot pillow motels, conducted a rather cursory hearing, and came to the conclusion that somehow or other Nichols College had violated this poor fellow's academic freedom by removing him from the classroom. I declined to respond, and as a result, today we wear with great pride an AAUP censure which has not been lifted since 1979, and for my part, I hope it never will be. We were punished for this triumph. This was a triumph of a good faculty dealing with the spirit of academic freedom and doing so highly competently, and frankly, it was immensely rewarding to me that we have such a fine group of people making recommendations of that kind. This is the kind of incident in higher education today which makes me feel a note of great optimism about being able to reverse the decline in the academy. This afternoon, we have three very distinguished presenters to deal with that issue on a different basis. The first of these is William Barclay Allen. Dr. Allen is a professor of government at Harvey Mudd College, and he teaches in the fields of political philosophy, American government, and jurisprudence. He's also the chair of the United States Commission on Civil Rights, has been on that commission since 1987, and has been the chairman since August of 1988. He holds a bachelor's degree from Pepperdine, an MA and a PhD from Claremont Graduate School, and has been both a Fulbright Fellow and a Kellogg National Fellow. To give you some insight into his academic orientation, I'll read just a few of the courses he's taught. Freshman Humanities Seminar, The American Founding, Modern Political Theory, Introduction to American Political Science, Plato's Laws, Aristotle's Politics, Law and the Social System, Constitutional Law, the Bill of Rights, American National Government, Hobbes, the Development Anti-Federalism, Tocqueville, American Political Thought, and on and on. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm delighted to offer you William Barclay Allen. Dr. Allen.